Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Once When I Was Cool, a podcast about various musings and stylings of two middle-aged men. It's been quite some time between drinks for we and I. We're finally back together and back recording again. So thanks for joining us again. Sorry, things are sort of being a little bit sporadic, but thank you to those who've hung on and happy to hang around and sort of listen. So we're going to take a little bit of a different tack tonight. But before we get started, I'll just introduce you to my offsider and my co-accused. Wee, how are you, mate?
Yeah, g'day, Dave. I was a bit concerned there where you said that we were back together. I'm thinking that's some news that our listener, hey, yeah, Shaniqua, yeah.
How are you,
didn't know about us, but no, that's not the case. So it's good to be back on the airways, getting out to your earballs.
Yes.
It has been a while and, unfortunately, there's been lots sort of going on in our life and we've been a bit time poor. But
the perils of middle age, really, and time poor and, just sort of difficulty moving forward.
So lazy.
I guess the difference in the story we're going to do tonight is we're going to have a few stories. We sort of mentioned a few episodes ago that we might go into some of the spookier sorts of tales that we have from our experiences working as nurses in hospital settings. So it's a little bit of a different episode tonight. It's just something that we're going to sort of try out and see how we go, just sort of bouncing backwards and forwards. Some of these stories are, like with everything we do, just a bit of fun. But if you're not really interested or you're not really sure about sort of ghost stories and spooky sorts of things, then it's probably not going to be the episode for you. Likewise, there may be a few being hospital stories. There might be a little bit of blue language or a little bit of mistimed humor that's you only sort of find funny from our perspective. But look, see how you go. Give it a go. Thanks for listening.
And at the end of the day, it's like most of our episodes, it's never researched. It's just us talking about what we've experienced in life. And it's just about, a different part of our life, which is our working life. So, we'll see how it goes.
That's exactly right. So for, both of us, if you don't know, both of us are registered nurses. We've been registered nurses for about 30 years. It's how we met each other. How we met our wives, and it's sort of what we do now and what we're still in all these years later. So, Wee, have you got one you want to kick off with? A bit of a spookier story.
I can tell you about the very, very first day that I actually started nursing on the ward. So I'm talking 31 years ago now. I was a young buck, and I was what they call hospital-based trained enrolled nurse. So I trained it basically exactly what it is. It's a hospital-based train. So I was all of 17 years old. I actually started my nursing career and dealing with people's lives when I was 17. And when you actually hear the stories we've said across our podcast, you'd be wondering how anyone would let a maniac like me near anyone and especially their lives. But it pretty much was, it was pretty much you did a week of lectures and then they let you loose and they put you on shift work and away you go and you learn basically on the job. But my very first week, Monday to Friday, did my lectures. The next week after the weekend, Monday, Tuesday, day off, late shift on the Wednesday, start at 2:30 in the afternoon, 5 o'clock. I had to lay out my first body. And by that, I mean, that's when somebody passed away and has died and you get them ready to place them up into the mortuary and up into the
So it involves cleaning a person down and just making sure that they're clean and dignified and laid out right just before they go into the mortuary, before they then go to the funeral home.
And back in the day, when you're looking at healthcare 31 years ago to today, it was very different. One, there was a lot of things that you had to do. You wash the body, then you basically had to tie, put them in a certain position and make sure that they stayed in that position, and that used having to tie them in a specific way and things like that. So they were ready for the undertaker.
And when we say tie, we mean you used a bit of
bandage.
Like a loose... Oh, bandages, yes, of course. I was thinking the cotton tape, but it was the bandages, wasn't it? And just more than tie, it's more bandage their feet and their hands together so that they're in the position that they're more dignified, I guess, than anything else.
Yeah. And then another part of it is that you had to put... cotton wool balls into orifices, because when people die, everything relaxes and everything leaks out. So as you can imagine, young buck is 17, and I actually, the other senior nurse that was there had to leave and go and get this stuff. So I was left in this room with this poor, lovely person who'd passed away, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if they were going to be like a zombie and get up and started. You know, I had no idea. So my first experience, my very first day, was having to lay out of body. This is what you know, they shade you through the ward, and then it's like, oh, you need to come in and then lay this body out. So I'll always remember that as my very first day working in a hospital.
Finish off. I'll tell you about my first day.
I was going to say I'll never, ever, ever forget that. I'll tell you another story a bit later about, laying out bodies. Now, just when we talk about laying out bodies and having to put stuff into orifices, back in these days it's totally different. You just place them into a body bag, make sure they're nice and clean, and you place them into a body bag. You don't have to put them into...
The bags are leak resistant. In the old days, they were just like old tarpaulins that they used to put on. And
you had to wrap them in a sheet like a mummy in a specific way. It was quite an ordeal, but you had to roll little bits of cotton wool and just place in their eyes to keep them in a certain position, their nose, their mouth, their ears, and every other orifice. And so with a male, you can't really stuff that. You had to tie that off. So you know, there was a few times you like, you know, but this just doesn't
tying off that type of thing, though, it must have been good that you could finally get paid for that hobby.
Yeah, well, you know, absolutely.
But it's interesting that this is the way you used to do it. And when you used to have to lay somebody out like that, did you ever talk to them?
I
still do.
Spoke to them, and I still do.
Yeah, I still do too. I speak to them as if they're just sleeping, or as if they're just that sort of dignity. And I don't know whether it more helps me or whether it more helps them. But even through all the different age ranges, and I've been unfortunate enough to experience death across the age ranges, this hasn't started off as a very lighthearted sort of thing.
No.
But I still do it in the way, regardless of the age they are. So before we go on any more about laying out bodies and things, I'll tell you about my first day. And I'm not sure whether I've told this before, but my very first day was in an aged care ward in a hospital. I'd worked for a few months before then in an aged care home, so an old people's home. But I went into this this ward, and I was brand new, and I was with somebody else who'd been there for a year or so, and they'd worked as nurse before then, and so they were a bit more experienced with me. And there was this old bloke in there who I still remember his name was something like Ernie or something like that, and he was in his 80s, and he was just fed up, and you know, apparently he'd been telling people that he was sick of it and he just wanted to go, as a lot of the old blokes used to do in those days. And anyway, I came in, it was getting close to handover time. So I'd been there since 7 o'clock in the morning, and it was probably about 2:30. So I had about an hour to go on my shift, and I went around and just went to talk to him, and he's a bit of a cantankerous old beggar. And anyway, I looked, and in his drawer, he had this little box of laxatives, and it had 30 pills in it or something. And I took it out and every pill was gone. And I said to him, did you take these? And he said, yep, I took the lot and I hope they bloody kill me. And I said, oh, and of course, I'm brand new. I didn't know what to do. I hadn't been in the hospital. I was living in a city I'd never lived in before. And I went, oh, I don't know. Is this guy, you know, I knew, I didn't know what they did. I knew what they did, but I didn't know whether if you took 30 of them, what it would do. Anyway, this old bloke's being cantankerous. So I told the nurse that was like supervising me, that was with me. I told him what happened. He said, oh, well, you better call the registrar, call the doctor in charge and see what he says. And so the doctor in charge came around, and I told him, and I said, oh, look, Ernie's taken 30 of these laxative tablets, and, you know, I'm not really sure what to do. And this doctor just cracked up and said, well, you better get the sheets ready, and walked away. And that was all he said. I went, oh, okay, well, it's obviously not going to hurt him too much, or if it does, it'll teach him a very sordid lesson. But yeah, that was my first day. That was my first experience of things, and I still remember that.
I bet he really wanted to die after the 30.
Well, they hadn't worked within an hour. I'll tell you, they hadn't worked within an hour, and I went home. So, you know, no harm, no foul to me.
It would have been foul, I tell you. 30 laxatives. But that's – and look, can I say that nurses find the humour in the most obscure – the most obscure things, and you hear me giggling about when we're talking about, you know, this patient who's just going to just be pooing, and that's what's going to happen with this patient.
But if you were the nurse that had to look after them, you're the one that would have to deal with it. You know, you wouldn't be laughing then.
No, not at all. But I think that's what gets a lot of nurses through. It's the ability to laugh.
The gallows humor.
It's not only that, it's what helps get nurses through their shift, even when bad things happen, you know, and they do. That, you know, really good things happen in hospitals, but sometimes bad things happen. And, you know, not every, our aim is to get everybody out the door, and sometimes they go out a different door. And so from that aspect, you know, we do use a bit of,
Have I ever told you about the old lady that was having the colonoscope, which was, you know, a tube up the backside to have a look through your bowel to make sure you don't have cancer or any other problems? Did I ever tell you the story about her on a night shift? We used to get the back in the days when it wasn't a day procedure, you get them in the night before, especially when they were old. And this poor old lady had a little bit of mobility anyway. And I apologize. I tell this story all the time, so I do apologize if you've heard it before. But this little old lady, she was short. So no matter how far down you put the bed, you had to help her off. Anyway, this was in the days where you had to drink 4 liters of prep fluid. Yeah. And that was really difficult for all the oldies. A lot of them had started vomiting. But, you know, the idea of taking the preparation fluid is to clear out your bowel. So you end up with a fairly explosive type of diarrhea. And this little old lady, I was on a night shift with, there was always 2 registered nurses and an enrolled nurse. And the enrolled nurse was there to help you, you know, help on both sides and help the 2 registered nurses out. And so the buzzer went off, and it would have been about 3 o'clock in the morning. And this was back in the days where I just wore shorts and socks and shoes, you know, and a shirt, of course, but my uniform wasn't long trousers. And this enrolled nurse I was working with, and she was an amazing nurse, one of these people that you remember forever because she was so good. But anyway, we used to call her Prof, because we're short for Professor, because she knew everything. And she actually did. She was good. She'd been there forever. But anyway, I went into the buzzer because this lady was due for a colonoscope the next morning. And so she was having the prep, and she'd finished a prep that night, but she was still having the bowel movements. And so we had a commode chair with a bedpan there in the bed next to her. But she was little and doddery, and so I had to help her in. And anyway, I've turned her around to face the commode. And so her backside's come past me. Because I'm wearing shorts and socks, as she's gone, the effort of moving around has caused this almighty explosion, sprinkler. which was exactly like a sprinkler, and it cut me straight across the shins. Now, back in these days, you had to wear long socks, and if you wore long socks with shorts, if you wore shorts, you had to wear long socks and have them pulled up. So even though it was 3 a.m, I had these socks pulled up, got me straight across the shins with a big brown stripe straight across my white socks. And anyway, I went, you know, and I couldn't just leave her there. And I was all of 21, and I couldn't leave her there. And so I had to turn around, got her on. She said, oh, I'm so sorry. And anyway, I went and got towels and did everything, got her back into bed. All the while I had these pooey socks still on. And it's not mine either. It's not my poo. So I'm really not really, really enthused about that. So I've got her back into bed. And anyway, I've gone into the pan room, and then I'm sitting at the desk with my socks off, washing them in a thing of hot water, just hand scrubbing them with a pair of gloves on, just washing them to try and get them there. And then I, you know, wringed them out as best. So anyway, I'm sitting there scrubbing these socks, just putting them together like I'm, you know, a peasant from the 1700s banging them on a rock. So I'm sitting there washing these socks away, and this, fortunately, the what's coming out is just like this rusty water looking stuff. So there's nothing solid in it or anything like that. So I'm sitting there, and prof comes around and she's always, you know, always on for a laugh. And so I told her the story and she had a very similar reaction to yours. She was in stitches. She was laughing so hard. She thought it was the funniest thing ever. Anyway, about 15, 20 minutes later, this lady buzzes again. And I said, oh, prof, can you go and help us? Sorry, I'm just trying to get myself cleaned up here. And she said, yeah, no worries, no worries. So she went in there. And then I didn't see her for about three quarters of an hour. I had 10 patients. The other nurse had 10 patients. And we hadn't seen prof for ages. Anyway, I got up. I got my socks as dry as I could. They're always going to be damp. Got myself dressed and sorted out. This was sitting at the desk that I did this at the nurse's station. And so I'm wandering through looking for prof, and prof is in the back room, in the back pan room. I said, where have you been? What took so long? Anyway, it turns out she did, this woman did exactly the same thing to her, but she had trousers on. But the force of it was so strong when she moved her, it actually cut across and hit all the curtains as well. So it sprayed and stained the entire curtains. So at nearly 4 o'clock in the morning, here's this poor nurse pulling all the curtains down. Yeah. And this was the days before disposable curtains. So they had to go to the laundry. So she's pulling them all down at 3 a.m. and had to put them up because she couldn't leave curtains with poo on them till the morning stuff. And then it was just the best because I laughed and laughed at her then. So I got
your revenge, mate.
Got my revenge. Well, the little old lady was looking after me.
Yeah, well, that's...
So that's another poo story. We've seemed to have gotten away from ghosts and things, and we're in the poos now.
Yeah, and that was pretty much straight off. It was a dead person, then poo. And I'm just sitting here thinking, well, what have I had down my boots? So there's two things. So back in the day where you do a cesarean section, so as people are aware, that's to have, you know, where they do a Caesar to remove
a baby. C-section,
C-section. So when you're doing those, as you can imagine, you've got the sack of fluid around it, which has got the amniotic fluid in. So what they tend to do is the mother has the spinal, which is an anesthetic into their back to help
them. An epidural type thing, yeah.
Yep. And then so from there, they we get them and you start. It's like an operation. And, you know, the surgeon the obstetrician, depends on where you are as to what you've got, starts cutting down. So my job as the scrub nurse was to, as soon as they get to the uterus, they cut the skin, cut the muscle layer, cut the uterus. And then as soon as they cut the uterus, well, then there's just fluid coming out.
Old Faithful.
And can I tell you, back in the day, I used to wear gumboots in theatre. So there is nothing like having gumboots, and I'm talking, they've got a sucker, and the sucker is, it was a metal sucker, and it had...
It's like a vacuum suction, you mean?
Yeah, but it just had all these holes through it on every side, so it wouldn't get blocked, and it just had maximum suction. It wasn't enough, so I was sucking the fluid as it hit the amniotic sac. And it's just come straight down to me because I'm so short, and straight down because I used to tuck my scrub pants into my gumboots at the time, straight down. And yes, surgeons wear gumboots and they still do today. Straight down into my gumboots. So I'm standing there. You can't leave. So I'm standing there with warm, baby warm, mama warm, amniotic fluid in my boots. So it was just like warm,
standing in a tropical fish tank,
and it was the most horrendous thing, and I really don't like the smell of Lycor anyway, and it was just in my, so I had to stand there. It was warm and then it got very cold because theaters are very cold. They only run at about 18 to 20 degrees, so it got very warm and then it got very cold, so I had to stand there in these boots.
And so were your toes all wrinkled up like you've been in the bath too long?
It was the most horrendous thing, you know, and it's one of those things. And when you think about it, I don't think anyone realizes what it's like to have fluid out of somebody else's body onto your body, because you just know that it's warm. It feels not right.
Well, when I was a student nurse, There was a one of my first placements as a student nurse. So I went to university. I was university trained, but we used to go out, a couple of times a year into various placements to try and put everything into practical. And so one of my placements, my very first placement on practical, was in a nursing home in a little town, little country town, in New South Wales in Australia. And anyway, I was learning how to wash and clean the elderly, and we'd get them up and we'd take them in for showers. And interestingly enough, all the regular staff would just disappear when the students are around. So you had to sort of figure it out for yourself. Anyway, I needed to wash. It came time to brushing someone's dentures or brushing their false teeth because they can't do it for themselves and they need to have the proper hygiene and the like. So fair enough. I went along and I had a glove. Luckily, I had a glove in my hand, and I said to this old person who I thought who had been taking their teeth out, put my hand out and said, "Oh, can I have your teeth and I'll wash them?" And this old this person, I still remember what they did, leaned over my hand and just went and spat them straight into my hand. And I went, "Okay, here we go." So that was lots of fun.
There's always the old, so nursing has a lot of its own sort of urban myths and urban legends. And I think everyone says about how some student nurse went around one day and took everyone's dentures out and washed them all in a bowl because, you know, the whole ward's dentures. I think, you know, that's an urban urban legend or urban myth, I should say.
Have you heard the urban myth about the boiled lollies? Surely you've heard that one.
Oh, yes.
So the story is, and I've heard three people tell me that it's gospel.
I think I told you about that
Yeah. No, I've heard it so many times from people saying, "Oh, well, I worked at this place." And the story goes, I'm sure it happened at one point originally, but the nurses used to go into this old bloke in the nursing home's lolly drawer, and he always had these hard lollies in there. And he'd always offer them up and they would say, "Oh yeah, here you go. Here, have a lolly." And they'd always take them. And, you know, they were like the hard lollies that you couldn't chew. You'd have to suck them and they'd sit in your mouth for ages. Anyway, one day they went in there and there were these chocolates in there. And they said, "Oh, how come you've got chocolates today instead of your usual lollies?" And he said, "Oh no, they're the usual ones. I just haven't gotten around to sucking the chocolate off them yet." But that's an old, I'm sure that's an urban legend because I've heard that on a few different occasions.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard that too. And people do tell you like they were there where it actually happened. I'm sure it probably has happened at some stage.
It must have some element of truth in it. But another one of the urban legends that I've heard, which we'll actually get onto the topic, 25 minutes in, we'll finally get onto the topic of what we were going to talk about, is the story of various hospitals that you go to. Now, hospitals are always places of sadness and sorrow and death, as well as a bit of happiness as well. But I went to one hospital once and was working on a ward. And some of the things that you see just sort of out the corner of your eye that sort of creep you out and you think, it's the things that you think are there and then they're not. And I just always, because I've always worn glasses, I put it down to catching the corner of my glasses. But then, you sit there and you try and concentrate a little bit on just seeing it out of your peripheral vision and you see things move and, you know, it's always at 2 and 3 and 4 in the morning, so you're never quite sure of what it is. But one of the urban legends that I heard was when I moved to Sydney, and yet again, somebody told me it was true. Sorry, I've got a dog barking. Sorry, that just had a pause there for a moment while I had some wayward dogs. So back to my story. Urban legend. So on this ward, and I've heard it a couple of times now, but the first time someone told me, hook, line and sinker, absolutely believed it. And we were telling spooky stories. It was about 4 in the morning or something like that. And somebody, there's always this talk, you get a lot of different hospitals and people talk about the grey nun. A lot of the hospitals way back when there was, when the nurses were also nuns and used to work there and that was their entire life. And so they died and they didn't know what to do. So they kept on going. So back in New South Wales in the early 90s when I was there, there was apparently some law or some regulation or something that you weren't allowed to get patients out of bed to shower before 5:30 in the morning. So this one nurse, and, always somebody knows it was Vera on the floor above us that it happened to, and, always someone. this nurse went in one day, went past her room, and it was about 4:30. Well, about 4:30 in the morning, and she walked past, and all the lights are on in this room, and all the patients are up and sitting next to their beds. And this nurse went in, and it was a surgical ward, so they all had some sort of operation the next day that they had to go to. So they were in the night before to get ready. And so this nurse went in and said to all the patients, why are you all up so early? It's only 4:30 in the morning. You've still got a couple of hours before you have to get up. And they all told the same story, that there was a nurse dressed in grey that came in and told them they all had to get up and get ready because they were going to have an operation in the morning. They needed to be ready and sit out of bed. And so the story from that is that this nurse, you know, would come in on a rounds and occasionally get people out of bed and do it, you know, get them all ready, which is always sort of creepy, especially when someone tells it's a bit like a fireside story.
Yeah, very, very creepy. And yeah, I mean, I hadn't personally heard that. I've heard that, you know, a few times from different nurses, but not in any of the places that I worked. But what I did have, and I have to say, this is my own personal experience, is, you know, and it always tends to happen on late at night or in the early hours of the morning, is I worked in an area where one end was maternity and at the other end was the geriatric and palliative care, and I used to call it the hatched and dispatched wing. So sometimes there was no one in the hatched, so you'd be down in the dispatched and you'd be sitting there and it'd be very quiet, and then all of a sudden it'd be like you'd go to get up and go to the nursery because you could hear a baby crying. So there'd be, and you'd be going, and then you'd stop and go, oh, hang on a second. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. And yep. It'd be like, hang on a second. We don't have any babies in at the moment. And it would just be this sporadic sort of cry, and the hair on my back of my neck is actually just standing up because I've actually experienced.
There's a lot to stand up.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you'd get to a point where you go, no, it's just you're tired, you're hearing things. And then, you know, probably there was that, but then there was always this, oh, no, you know, there's always, unfortunately, and the sad part of a hospital is sometimes there are, you know, stillborns and things like that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, things, sad things happen. And it'd be just an occasion, you know, there'd be just moments of silence. You'd be doing something, writing in a chart or something, and you just hear it. And your instinct is you go to get up to, and yep. you go, oh, hang on a second. We don't have anyone there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but, you know, I've honestly.
But that hospital that you were at, I know the one you're talking about, that was a creepy old hospital. It's been there for a long time. So,
oh, yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
people are come and gone through there.
Oh, mate. And I can tell you another story now. And I think this is probably the most scared I've ever been at work, in terms of sensation and feeling. And mm-hmm. we had a patient who, and you'd do rounds and you'd check on your patients and you'd have either a torch or something, just, and you'd shine on the floor just, and you just look to make sure they were in bed, they were okay, they were safe. And we knew, we had a patient in a single room, and we knew that he was not much, you know, he was palliative, he was dying, and at that particular stage he didn't really have any relatives around, so we were rounding on him, and I walked past the room, shone the torch in, could see that he was it was still with us, still had rise and fall of his chest, turned my light off, turned, walked out, and all I could feel was this, like someone was standing and walking out behind me. And
mm-hmm.
I sort of got the shackles on the back of my neck came up, and I turned around, I sort of walked really quickly away, and then I went, no, hang on. I walked back in, and he passed. So whether, you know, he was following me out looking for an exit, don't know. But, you know, it's one of those things you sort of, I think you're sometimes a little bit more in tune. I think it's your night shift plays havoc with your mind because you're tired, you don't sleep properly, you're not eating properly. Yeah. So
I, I worked, like I said, I worked in a nursing home, and like you say, there's people that don't have a lot of family and a lot of people around, and especially the people with dementia. Now, my father died with dementia, and he was in a nursing home for about 5 years, and he used to always see his brother and his mother who had died previously, and he would swear that they were there, even in his more lucid times. But I remember in the first nursing home I worked at, it was a little old one in Brisbane. It was a privately owned nursing home. And they had a photo of, well, not a photo, a picture in the foyer. As you walk straight in the door, there was a big picture. It was a portrait of a young girl, lady, sort of, 18, 19, 20-year-old. And it was one of these creepy pictures that no matter where you were, no matter where you stood around it, it was always looking at you. And that I'd never seen a picture like that. And it kind of unnerved me a little bit. But when you were there late at night and you'd hear suddenly the buzzer would go off, and it was a nursing home, so you know it was where people went and their lives ended there. So you'd be sitting down and all the residents would be in bed and you'd be watching TV or reading the paper or doing something, and suddenly a buzzer would go off, and you're in the area where nobody was ambulance, so you'd go and have a look and there's no one in there, and you know people say, oh, you know, it's just the humidity, well, we haven't had a shower in there, and it's just the wiring and all these sorts of things. And I remember I was doing a an afternoon shift there one point in time, and we turned all the lights off because all the residents had gone to bed and it's their home. So, you know, you try and make it as pleasant as possible for them. I was doing this night shift and was standing there and just felt this cold feeling wash straight over me. It was like I'd walked, you felt the temperature decrease like immediately. And I just sort of stood there and I went, oh, and it felt like it had passed from my right side, had gone through me like something, like a line had passed through me, or like somebody had walked through me, and I felt, and it just felt awful. And it was, you know, the hair on the back of your neck and those types of things. And, you know, I was young, and I think I was yet again when I was 20, 21, and I didn't really know what was going on. And then there was an old bloke I remember. I think his name was Fred. It's amazing the names you remember, but I think his name was Fred. And when I went in there, he's a bit cantankerous. And as he went on, he lost a lot of weight and he had dementia and became more bedbound. But anyway, we were in talking to him one night and he didn't really say much, but me and another girl were standing next to his bed doing something. We were turning him or doing something like that. And he suddenly opened his eyes, sort of sat forward a bit and started talking at the end of the bed where there was nobody there. And it was like he was having a conversation and he was talking to somebody who he could see, but we couldn't. And that was quite creepy. Mm. But what I'm getting at is back to the picture, is the picture was the owners. One of the owners was actually in the nursing home. He was the only person that had his private room. Fair enough, he owned the joint. And the picture was of their teenage daughter who had committed suicide like years earlier, and they had this photo. And I know it wasn't her haunting the place, but it just sort of all went hand in hand with it, and this creepy sort of picture. And it was just a weird kind of place.
Yeah, there's lots of obviously there's always, you know, lots of stories and things, but what I liked doing, as you said, you knew the hospital where I worked, and it was old and creepy. And I used to take that to my advantage. I would spend a bit of time trying to scare the girls, and because I was the only bloke there for quite some time. There used to be, you'd go from the main building over to the other building, and there was this really long sort of covered in corridor, and so you could see the nurses coming from the other building into the building that I was in. So I'd see them coming, and it'd give me time to run around quickly outside and stand up by the window. So when they're walking past, all you see is me standing on the outside of the window. So you just hear them and just hear this almighty scream, and it'd just be, or I'd go boo, and you just see them, they'd let out this almighty scream. But the best one I got was, I've had two good, really good reactions for a scare. So when, and again, when patients pass away, they go up to the morgue, they'll go up on a morgue trolley. And basically it's a sliding table that comes out of the cold room, the morgue area, out of the refrigerator, and that gets put onto a trolley. The trolley gets taken down after you finish preparing the patient, you put them on it, you cover them over with a special sort of little cage that lid. Sort of fits, yeah, that goes across them, and then you put a cover over it. So we did have a patient that had passed away, and we did have the orderlies bring the bullet down, but there were still family members in there. It was on changeover of shift from the afternoon to night shift. So they were getting handover, and they were getting handover, and they were getting handover across the desk. So there were the three nurses on the night shift, and two were on one side of the nurse's station sitting on a chair receiving handover. So I said to the boys, put me on the trolley. So I got them to put me on as if it
was bad karma.
And so as we were walking past them, we just got them, went past, and I've just stuck my hand out and grabbed one of them. And the blood curdling scream that came out of him was hilarious. And you know, they called me all sorts of nasty things and hurt my feelings, but no, it was funny. It was absolutely funny. But yeah, but I've done that a couple of times. I got myself placed into a box and delivered in when I worked in an operating theatre, delivered into the recovery area by one lot of orderlies for a lot of orderlies to open the box up and put the stuff away that was in the box. And when one of the guys came to do it, jumped up out of him. I've never seen a man do a backwards jump at about 5 meters at about 1,000 kilometers an hour. It was hilarious.
So the other sort of ghost story that I guess that I remember most at the moment, it's actually happened probably probably December last year. I was doing night shift over in one of the hospitals that I work at. And we were closing down one area because there was nobody in the department. It's a private hospital. So, and it's a very, very old hospital for, you know, in Tasmania is probably Hobart's one of the oldest cities in Australia, which, you know, by European standards isn't that old, but for us it certainly is. There's this one ward, one part of the emergency department that used to be the day surgery ward that's been taken over by the emergency department. And before that, I think it may have been some sort of aged care facility type thing. So, anyway, I was in there one night, and I would look over, and interestingly enough, this bed number was 13. And now I don't have any superstitions around the number 13 or anything like that, but I happened to just out the corner of my eye, I could see a little old lady there, and I could describe her. I could describe her down to what she looked like in her hair, and she was sitting on the edge of this bed. And I turned my head to look and disappeared. Nothing there. First time I thought, oh, well, it's just me. And then came back in about 10 minutes later and did it and happened again and then happened again. And I thought, oh, well, you know, this is what happens. Anyway, the girl that I'm working with at about 4 a.m. said, you know, I've been seeing somebody down in that room all night. And I said, oh, a little lady sitting on bed 13, sort of this and this and this. And her face went white because we'd both been seeing the same person through this shift. And, you know, both of us said, well, she never came back down there again. I had to go down there for the rest of the night, but it wasn't a malicious feeling or anything like that. It was, you know, it was just there. It was somebody there. So anyway, smash cut to a few months later, I was talking to her because we were on an afternoon shift again. I hadn't seen her for a while. I just made some sort of comment on bed 13, and she said, oh, I've been meaning to tell you. I was talking to another one of the nurses who is one of the senior nurses there who'd been there for about 10 years and done a lot of night shift. And this girl had said to this senior nurse, said, something about the ghosts are playing up the other night, or a couple of months ago, the ghosts were playing up. And she said, have you... And the senior nurse said, oh, you're talking about the old lady in bed 13. And his nurse went pale again. And the nurse said, oh, did Dave put you up to this? Have you been talking to him? And she said, no. I hadn't seen this nurse for about a year because we just never cross paths and I don't work there that often. And she said the same. She said, no, I haven't heard. I've just seen her there, you know. And she said the same sort of thing. But it's interesting that three of us have seen it. and all can sort of describe it down to the same sort of thing. Now, I'm not sure if it's a thing, if it's actually something, it's just something I could see out the corner of my eye.
Mm.
But what's more, but the two of us had seen it, but what was more disturbing was the other one that I'd seen down there, and it was another thing, but this one was just a dark shadow, like a dark shape of something about up to my shoulder, so probably about 5 foot tall, and just standing there. And there was one night I saw it about two or three times, just standing in this doorway, and I went, okay. And this one just felt creepy and weird. It wasn't scary, but it was just a bit creepy and weird. And I went, okay. And I went down and had a look and walked down to it. Couldn't see anyone, had a look around, but it was just, it was like a dark shadow and only ever out the corner of my eye. And so I walked down there and had a look around, couldn't see anything. There was an exit light over the top. I thought, oh, maybe it's throwing a shadow or something like that. Anyway, I walked out and started walking down the corridor, and the corridor is probably about 50, 60 feet long. And I'm walking down there, and, I got that cold feeling again that I'd remembered from all those years before, and I had this cold feeling, but this time it stayed with me. It's like somebody was walking with me. And I just said, okay, I think that's enough now. And it went away. And now I just sort of, and I've actually seen the shadow a couple of times since, but it's not something that I ever try to tangle with. And I certainly try not to acknowledge its presence or get, or, you know, get creepy. It to see me there. It's creepy. In that, and please don't think that I'm a great believer in ghosts. I'm actually quite skeptical about it. I don't understand it. And, you know, being brought up Catholic and, you know, heaven and hell and all these sorts of things, I don't really understand how they exist, but I'm interested. And I will say I'm skeptical. I don't know that I saw a ghost or anything like that. And I would never say that I have, but I'm interested to know what it actually was.
No, look, and look, you're right. And there's always... And yeah, and we're dealing with people at all different stages of age, and they're leaving, and there's always stories, and there's stories about this building, that bed, that ward, you hear the sounds. And look, I don't know if it's just your mind playing tricks on you, or, but I can guarantee you there's any person out there who is a who is a nurse or worked in the nursing home or anything would have a very similar story and could tell you stories.
And I think, you know, cops, you know, and firemen and ambulance people and people like that would have a similar sort of story.
And I'm sure there's people who are in the building industry and doing buildings, you know, doing some building and all, or electrical stuff in old buildings would have, you know. So I'm sure there's, you know, there's always those.
It's just not a healthcare thing, but that's our point of reference, really.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really amazing that.
Now, you're not a fan of ghost horror sort of movies, are you?
Nah, not really.
There's a movie that Nicole Kidman was in quite a while ago now that was called The Others. If you've seen that movie and you know the premise of what actually happens, that's the sort of thought I have on it. But like I said, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical without being cynical. I mean, I'm open to the idea that it's possible, but I don't really have any point of reference to believe that there's anything like that. I've had lots of weird feelings, but I've had lots of weird feelings in the shopping center and nightclubs as well. So, you know,
we're walking through the park.
Yeah. That's
hiding in the bush in the park.
Yeah. Hiding from you.
Yeah, true. But the thing is, and I have to say, a lot of the time, a lot of these things obviously happen at night because there's less people around, things are quiet, blah, 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 all of that. But the toll, and anyone who works shift work in any job will tell you, there's time that you're that tired, it's like you're drunk. And, you know, I've definitely been that tired that I've sort of felt like I've had a night on it. But I've actually witnessed someone fall asleep standing up and fall down like a tree in a forest. You know, and I couldn't do anything. I just had to stand there and watch because I was at one side of the desk, they're at the other side of the desk. But it was a night shift, and it was early on in the night, so they obviously mustn't have had much sleep through the day. But they were actually used to sign your name in on a timesheet and on a register when you worked in that. And she was standing there and she was doing a timesheet and she just sort of stopped writing midway through. And I was sort of looking at her and I'm thinking, oh, she must have got a name. Next minute I look at her, and her eyes are closed. she's asleep and she's just fallen like a tree. So you know that feeling you have when you're falling and you're in that sleep and you jump? Like she would have had that feeling until she hit the ground. And it was an absolute...
Did she hurt herself?
No, because she was so relaxed and sleeping. It was honestly just
it
like...
it made an awful noise.
Oh, it was horrendous.
That
and all
slap.
I could, yeah, and all I could think of is head injury. Mm. What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? I'm just have to hit it the nearest emergency button. But she got up. She did hit the back of her head. She didn't like knock herself out because she was knocked out before she got hit the floor. She was asleep. And I think that's what saved her. She was a bit bigger girl, so I think, you know, that she had a bit of additional padding there to help.
She rolled more than fell, yeah.
Oh, but I tell you what, mate.
I mean that as she fell, she sort of, you know, like like the worm sort of thing.
Yeah, but one of the most fun, and like lots of funny things happen like that on night duty. But yeah, she was so tired. She fell asleep standing up and fell like a tree in the forest. And I was concerned, but laughing. And it's one of those things when people really hurt themselves, you tend to laugh. You look at something.
Yeah.
And I was really bad for it when I was a teenager. My mate had come off his skateboard and skating down a road, get the speed wobbles up and come off and graze himself. And all I could do was burst out laughing because I didn't know what else else to do. And I don't think I'm a malicious person. Yeah. Or maybe,
but let's face it, that the main reason that the majority of people watch ice skating is to see someone fall over. You don't watch it because you enjoy it. You watch it because you want to see someone.
Oh yeah, or lose a limb or something. Especially in the doubles when they're doing those spins, someone's head flies off.
No, don't think that's happened. But all right. Anything else you've got?
Oh mate, I've got lots. I could talk for.
Well, we might save it. Hours. We might save it for another edition.
Well, it depends if the listener likes it.
Yeah.
Shaniqua.
Yeah. If you enjoyed this, if you got stories of your own, let us know. onceforschoolpodcast@gmail.com. Like I said, we're here infrequently at the moment, but we're trying to get there as often as we can. Thanks for listening and thanks for sticking with us. We do appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, on that note, good to talk to you. We'll catch you on the flip side. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.